Wish you knew more about the medical device industry and how you can do your job more effectively and put your career on the fast track? Then stay tuned while industry veteran Pat Cothey shares strategies and tips from customers and company insiders who help drive the industry. Now let's join Pat as he explores how you can master medical device.
Welcome. Medical school. We all know it's an important part of a physician's education, but since none of us ever attended, we really don't know what it's actually like. And since most of our customers have been there, it's important that we know a little bit more about what they went through. I recently interviewed two medical students who are finishing their fourth and final year. They've got two totally different experiences, so I've made two separate episodes. I've known both of these guys since they were 7 or 8 years old because they're friends of my son, and I also help coach them in a few of their sports. These are two great guys. Today's guest is Danny McIntyre. Now, since most of us haven't gone to medical school, I asked him a bit about high school and college, so it'll help us relate to what it's really like. Danny is in an osteopathic school, which he'll explain, and he also has a scholarship from the U.S. military through their health profession scholarship program, and we'll learn what that's all about as well. Let's get on to the interview. Danny, 3.5 years of medical school completed.
I can't believe it.
Did it go as fast or as slow as what you were expecting it to be?
I wish I could say it was the blink of an eye, but you know, some days were the longest days of my life, but then I look back and weeks flew by. So I think it's really the long days, short weeks, even shorter months kind of thing.
Yeah. So you're kind of in a unique situation because you've got a military component to medical school as well, but we'll talk about the military thing in a little bit. Let's focus right now on the medical portion of it. Tell us about your medical school, where you go to medical school and kind of what it's all about.
Sure. So I go to medical school at New York Institute of Technology College of Osteopathic Medicine. I know that's a huge mouthful. I go to the satellite campus on Arkansas State. It's a satellite campus, so we shared most of our classes with our sister school up in Long Island. So first 2 years, we had all of our classes in a lecture hall live. However, they were broadcasted either from our school to theirs or from their school to ours. So we had microphones set up and video, so we were able to talk back and forth. And then third year, that's our first year clinicals. And that's where students kind of start really getting introduced to, you know, seeing real patients and working with real doctors out in the real world. And we did that all over the state of Arkansas. I had friends that were up in Northwest Arkansas and Little Rock and South Arkansas and Memphis. I ended up doing mine in my home city of Jonesboro, Arkansas, which is Northeast Arkansas, at one of the hospital systems around there. And then fourth year is where we travel to all our residencies.
So the school itself, you say it's osteopathic. What does that mean?
So osteopathic is a different way of thinking in medicine. We do all the same things as allopathic schools, which are MD schools. We learn the same thing, same anatomy, same medicines, same ideas of treating sicknesses. However, we think of the patient as a whole, as opposed to someone who might just have COPD, and we treat their COPD, but we might treat, you know, their COPD and lung breathing problems and, you know, their home life, how that might change. So we kind of try and think of the patient as a whole as opposed to a problem. So that's kind of the broad approach, but we also have this tool in our toolbox called osteopathic manipulative medicine. And DO schools, osteopathic schools, have 200 hours of hands-on practice with manipulations of the musculoskeletal system that we can apply to our patients in times of need. And one of the biggest things we do is back pain or neck pain or headaches. And we might be able to solve that with some manipulations of the musculoskeletal system that allopathic doctors might not be able to solve as quickly or as well.
So A few months from now, when you graduate, what initials are you going to have at the end of your name?
They will be DO, so DO. Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine.
Great. So of the physicians that are out there, do you have any idea what percentage are DOs versus MDs?
I do not know the exact percentage. However, I know a large portion of DOs work in primary care. So whether that be family practice, internal medicine, pediatrics, that is kind of the bread and butter for osteopathic medicine. So that's where the majority of DO students go and match into residencies and practice in. That's not to be saying that there's a lot of specialists who are DOs as well in all kinds of specialties, anesthesiology, surgery, surgical specialties, OB. We're across the board, but primarily in those primary care settings.
So let's go back a little bit. Let's go back to the time when you decided that medicine looked interesting to you. What age was that?
It had to be first grade.
Really?
I know it kind of sounds strange to say first grade, but back in those times, I broke my arm. I was riding a bike and lost control and hit a house going off a 6-foot retaining ledge. So that was a quick trip to the ER for a broken arm. And I think that's my first experience with it. And that's kind of where my eyes were open to the field of medicine. And I was like, I want to be one of those when I grow up.
Do you know what about it interests you?
I don't know. I think I was just enamored with the workplace setting, the ER, the hustle and bustle of it, the status. I think it was just all of that combined, you know, in my first grade mind, kind of put it up on a pedestal for me to reach to.
So that was kind of the first. And Danny and I have known each other for, you know, since he was 7 or 8 years old. So I know some of the physical things that he's encountered through athletics and through different things. So I'm assuming that some of the other interactions that you've had with people in sports and physicians have also impacted that as well.
Yeah, with a lot of sports, you know, there's been, I think, a broken arm 3 times. I've had to have elbow surgery. I've had some shoulder issues, some knee issues. You know, sports definitely wreaked havoc on my body. But, you know, I think that pushed me down the road of medicine more than anything else. Just over the time, just kept getting introduced and exposed to medicine. So I think just throughout my life, it just kind of kept pushing me this way.
So let's talk about high school for a second. So you knew that eventually medicine looked to be interesting to you. Yeah. But when you're in high school, it's so far away. Did you put any pressure to did you have any pressure to really, you know, knuckle down on academic side of things to think through how you're going to get to medical school?
Yeah, I think that had some thought to it. Not really freshman or sophomore year of high school, but junior, senior year, when you're kind of thinking of where am I going to go to school, where, you know, what colleges would give me the best shot, kind of continuing my dream and to get into medical school. But I think my parents instilled a lot of hard work and, you know, dedication to studying and doing, you know, all my tasks. So I don't think that ever changed. I think more kind of focusing on where I need to be, where I need to do on my SATs, what school would give me the best shot at getting into medical school, which is, you know, the hardest hurdle of them all.
So you did well academically in high school. You also did well physically and athletically in high school. Just talk about real briefly about what your high school athletic career looked like.
You know, growing up just outside of Austin at Lake Travis High School, athletically, it was almost treated as a job sometimes. You know, Texas high school football, you got to think it's big. The TV shows don't do it justice. They might say they're over dramatized, but it's really true how competitive it all is and how job-like athletics is. So I played football up until my senior year when I decided to focus on baseball. You know, really successful in both sports. We had a couple state championships while I was playing football. And then my senior year of baseball, we made it to the state semifinals, which is the furthest we've ever made it in our baseball career at that point. And then eventually that kind of led me down the path of where I went to school for college. So I was able to play all 4 years at college at Stevens Institute of Technology. That's up in Hoboken, New Jersey. So I made a little switch and went up north.
So let's talk about that transition. So when you chose colleges, you had kind of two things going, you know, that you were looking at, I would assume. One is you wanted to play baseball. And Danny's a pitcher, successful pitcher, but also, you know, had high academic standards as well. So talk Correct. Me through the choice of schools at that point.
Yeah. So kind of like I was saying, in junior and senior year of high school, you're kind of looking at what's giving you the best options at, you know, getting into medical school. And what people always think is, I want to go Ivy League. And, you know, if you can get into an Ivy League school, that's going to set me up for medical school. So I was along the same train of thought. So kind of merging between, there's kind of an academic baseball community out there, and that there's a lot of camps that go along with that. And so I went to these camps in California and New York that all the Ivy League schools were at. And that's where my coach saw me. And he, you know, mentioned he coaches at Stevens Institute of Technology. I've never heard of it before that point. And then I did more research and learned that it's a, you know, top tier engineering school. I didn't want to do engineering, but I saw they had really good science programs. And I knew that this school would be a place I could play baseball and play it while doing my studies. And then B, it also gives me a good shot into matching in a medical school with the good track record of students that it's had move past university into doctorate programs.
So what did you major in college?
College, I majored in chemical biology, which I wish was more biology, but it ended up being a chemistry degree with just a sprinkle of biology just so they could say it was in there.
So Lake Travis High School is a very competitive high school. A lot of very bright kids attend Lake Travis High School. What about Stevens? What was the difference in the level of students going to college?
You know, in high school, if you put all the students on a standardized curve, you know, the top 10% at Lake Travis was what 100% at Stevens was. So if you kind of take that top 10% of whatever high school you went to and kind of think of who you knew that was kind of in that area of your class and kind of multiplied that across an entire class, that's what Stevens students were like. But I was very lucky that my baseball class that I came in with 12 other guys in my recruiting class, and we all had very similar mindsets of we want to play baseball and be successful at baseball, but we're here for school, and that's our number one priority. So we were very successful in balancing school and athletics.
And Stevens is located where?
It's in Hoboken, New Jersey. For people who don't know that area, it's a 7-minute train ride into Manhattan. So my school is actually located on the Hudson River with unobstructed views of Manhattan.
Beautiful place.
Oh, it's fantastic. It was a wonderful place to go to school. I wish I could go back.
So Danny, it's a very competitive school and you're in a very difficult major. A lot of times there are courses that are kind of weed out courses that are very difficult, like organic chemistry, things like that. Did you have any of those challenges?
My graduating class of my major, first of all, it's only about 2,000 students total, 2,000 students total at Stevens, about 500 a class. And my major, I think we started with 26 in the chemical biology department, and we ended up graduating 18. So dropping, you know, 9-10 people, that I think there's not one class you can kind of point it to. I think it's just at Stevens, we are always challenged with multiple chemistry, biology, physics, math classes with one literature arts class every semester. So that it was always, you know, just the combination of all four hard sciences. There were definitely some harder semesters, especially organic chemistry. That's one of the tougher hurdles to get past in our major. But if you can kind of get past that, you're kind of along for the ride and you're going to make it to graduation.
So you achieved academically as well as athletically again at Stevens, and now you kind of get ready for medical school.
Yeah, correct.
Now you've got to make that that choice, and you've got to prepare to go through the selection process. So tell me about that. Where you were and what you did to prepare.
So like you were saying, kind of the weed out classes, there was a period of my college career. I was like, is medicine for me? Do I want to go through four more years of school? Do I want to, you know, keep putting pressure on myself to keep getting to my dream and goal? And I think there was a time in sophomore year where I was like, I don't know if this is really for me. You know, I don't want to do that extra schooling and extra stress. But then junior year, I kind of had some experiences and I was like, you know what? Medicine's for me. This is what I want to do. And I kind of started going down that path of, okay, now I need to start studying for the MCAT. Now I need to start planning my med school application and getting all those papers in and making sure my GPA was where it needed to be. Because, you know, you're being very gracious saying I was a good student. I know I had some pretty good grades, but some of my classes I had to stay. I passed them, but I got some D's and C's in. So one of the summers between my junior and senior year, I stayed and took summer classes to change those grades to A's and boost my GPA so I would be a more competitive applicant. And, you know, kind of making sure my GPA was high, making sure I had a bunch of volunteer experiences, had some medical experiences. Extracurricular stuff, all the letters that I needed, you know, kind of forming a packet that you're going to present yourself as that you're a competitive medical student. And that's kind of junior and senior year. For me, it was mainly senior year after the academics that I started putting this packet together.
So Danny, where does this drive come from? I mean, you've been involved in athletics. You've got great parents. You've got teachers that have taught you things. But as you just kind of described things, and you knew that, you know, there were some things that you struggled in, you went back and redid them, recommitted yourself to it. Where does that drive come from?
Oh, that drive, I think I've always had it. I've seen people that have way stronger drives than I do. But I think mine has always stemmed of, I've always had it. It's always something that's been instilled in me from my parents at an early age. And, you know, you just have to keep going. I think, you know, just one more step and you'll be closer. Just, you know, always having a goal at the end, I think, is a big thing for me. And that light at the end of the tunnel, as long as you don't lose that, I think you can just keep taking one step and chipping away. As my dad always says, how do you move a mountain? And it's one stone at a time. And I think that's really the medical school approach, and kind of getting there and through medical school is you just have to chip away. It's too big to take in one bite.
Yeah, well said. So you mentioned MCAT before. Tell us about MCAT. What is it, and how do you prepare for it, and you know what is it all about?
So the way I had the MCAT described to me is you have to be able to stratify applicants, and the best of the best is what's applying to medical school. So you have to somehow be able to put on a list and say person A is better than person B or more competitive than person B academically. So the AAMC creates this test, and basically to standardize curve a top 2% of college students and make it so that you can kind of get these students in, you know, in an order so that medical schools can understand who's at least academically more capable. It's composed of four sections, a science section that's chemistry, a biology section, a reading section, which is oddly enough in a medical textbook, which oddly enough is one of the only few that's shown to predict how a medical student will be in medical school. You know, it's not the science sections. It's actually the critical reading and analysis section. That's the one that shows the most. So this test is a beast. It's 8 hours long. You take it in a Prometric Center where you go in, get wanded, make sure you don't have anything on you. And it's like going through airport security. You can't go in with anything. And you take this test. And, you know, like I said, it's 8 hours. After it, you wait a month, and then you find out your future if you're going to have a high, score high enough to get into medical school.
How did you prepare for it?
So me personally, I know I am not a good individual studier, or at least I wasn't back then. So I took a course by a company that kind of in person does a class, and it was 4 to 6 hours a day of preparing the subject material of the test. One of the mornings might have been spent on organic chemistry, and then that afternoon was spent on the critical reading. And then the next day it was the biology and the critical reading again. And I did that for a month straight over a Christmas break. And then about a week after I completed that, I took the MCAT, and that's when I took it.
Most of our listeners are in medical device industry, and they've done a bachelor's degree, some master's, some PhDs that are out there. Some people have, you know, most everyone is taking an SAT. Some have taken a GMAT or some other graduate type of thing. How would you compare that test to an SAT?
I don't think you could compare it, other than you have to sit for a long period of time answering questions that are going to tax your brain. And just as an endurance test, the MCAT is just another beast in itself. You're not supposed to know all the answers. I know there are people that are, but it's designed to test you, and it's timed. So you don't have all the time in the world to take it. And it's just enough to push you to where if you have to think about a question too long, you're going to get behind and not answer some questions. So I think it's hard to compare the SAT to an MCAT. You know, I think you have to prepare way more for the MCAT than I did for the SAT, at least.
Yeah. With some of these standardized tests, you get the results and you like the results and you think, oh, this is the range that medical schools are going to accept. And if you don't reach it, you know, you go and restudy and retake the test.
So I actually retook the test. It's a test that you can take as many times as you want, or I should say 3 times a year. I took it. I got an okay score, which was okay to match, but I knew some of the schools I wouldn't be competitive enough for. So I decided to retake the test. And that time I studied on my own instead of paying for the company to do the school again, and then took it again, I think that summer. So I took them probably 5 months apart.
So that's one component. You mentioned some of the other components that you had in preparation of applying for school. So you mentioned internships or proctoring. Tell me about some of the other things that you did to prepare.
So my goal is to become an orthopedic surgeon. That's what I'm striving for right now. That, you know, obviously with sports and all my injuries, that's kind of what most of my experiences have been in. But I was lucky enough to get to know my orthopedic surgeon on a little more of a personal note. And so I was able to ask him if I could shadow him while I was in high school and in college so that I could have some clinical hours with him in the OR and in the clinic and kind of get some experiences to make sure medicine was for me, and that on my application I could, you know, you need a certain amount of hours for some schools that you worked in a clinic, whether that be scribing for a hospital ER or, you know, shadowing your mom or dad in their family practice, or like I did, following one of the doctors in as an orthopedic. One of the components is definitely shadowing to make sure it is for you. And then kind of the other components that you were asking about, like extracurricular activities. I was very lucky. I had baseball. Having a sport greatly helped my application. It was something I could talk about in interviews. And it was something that kind of personalized me and made me stick out from the rest of the crowd.
So how do you apply for medical school?
With a lot of luck. There's a couple applications you fill out. One of them is for kind of a national application that most medical schools in the country look at. There's another application that Texas schools require you to fill out. And then some schools require you to fill out individual applications. these services look to make it easier on applicants. So you only have to fill out one application and then the schools pull from that server, whoever applies to them. So you don't have to type your name out 200 times. You just have to fill out one application and then send it to a bunch of schools. So that's usually done, you know, on one certain date, it's all released to all the schools and they kind of comb through their applications and then send it to you.
Are you applying to an individual school or are you applying to a service and then they match you to a school?
So you apply, you put all of your application information into this service. And then one of the screens says, would you like to apply to Dell Medicine or Texas Tech College of Medicine or, you know, NYITCOM at Arkansas State? So you kind of go down and check boxes of where you want to apply to. And of course, there's, you know, every application costs money. You know, you can't just apply everywhere unless you want to spend, you know, a couple thousand bucks on applications.
So how did you decide which ones you wanted to apply to?
Personally, it was a lot of region. I knew with my application, I needed to send out a lot of applications to hear back and get interviews. I sent them out kind of regionality. Have I heard of the school? Do I know someone who went there? You know, I got into NYITCOM at Arkansas State because I went to school. The sister school is very close to my undergrad and I lived in Texas. So it's kind of in between. So that's why my school sent me to Arkansas. But a lot of it was regional or knowing the school is how I kind of chose where to apply.
So you apply to them, you've got a package and they evaluate that package. And then how do you hear back from them that you're accepted?
A lot of the times you don't hear back. You know, that's just the nature of the game is you send out a ton of applications and you don't hear back. But schools, they comb through they pick who they want and they send you an email saying, we'd like to interview you. You know, here are the dates available. Here's where to arrive, who to talk to. So you RSVP for a date and then you go travel to that school. You know, it's either 1 or 2 days. And you show up, you talk with the administration, maybe a couple students who are there working some of the interviews, and you kind of see if is this school a good fit for me. And then after the interview, you kind of wait until a lot of it's rolling admissions. There's a couple dates that all the schools kind of send out acceptances or denials or wait lists. And so then they email you, hey, you're going to be a doctor, you know, congratulations, you got into blank school. We look forward to, you know, hearing back from you on your application acceptance.
Take me back to the time when you did not know and you were applying to all these different places. You hadn't heard back. You've had some interviews and you don't know whether you're going to get into medical school or not. And then you get the call. Tell me about that.
That was a scary time because, you know, I took a gap year between undergrad and medical school where I was kind of working some odd jobs. So I was just hanging around waiting for schools to get back to me. And, you know, one day I'm, you know, on my computer surfing the web. And then all of a sudden out of the corner, I see a little notification that pops up. Hey, you know, you got an email, open it up. And there it was, an acceptance. And I was like, hey, this is awesome. Amazing. Yelled down to my mom, and it was a great feeling. It was a lot of vindication that I didn't go through all this hard work just to kind of have a lot of denials.
So you've got several months to prepare to move, and now you know where you're going.
Correct.
So what's housing like?
Luckily, my medical school is on the campus of a bigger school. A lot of the times medical schools are standalone buildings on separate campuses. I was lucky enough that I was able to live my first year in a dorm or at least an apartment style dorm on the college's campus. So I was close to school. I was able to walk to campus, so I didn't have to worry about driving or my study habits. I need to be somewhere outside of the home. So I was able to go onto campus and study, at least in our school's building.
Was it within walking distance of your classes then?
Yes. All of my classes were within one building. It was my school. I will be the second graduating class. of my medical school. So it was a new building or newly renovated building with all the technology you could wish for. So I wanted to take advantage of all of that.
So let's talk about white coat ceremony. What's that all about? Who was with you? Who attended? And tell me how you were feeling that day.
Yeah. So one of the very special things about medical school is the white coat and kind of that symbol of being in the profession of medicine. And so a very special day is the white coat ceremony. And that's kind of when you're indoctrinated into being a doctor. That happened about 2 months into my first year. My parents came up, my brother came up from Austin and traveled to Jonesboro. And everyone's family's there, and it's a really special day. You're out on stage, there's a bunch of speakers, and then kind of like a graduation ceremony, you walk across the stage, and you know, if you have a family member who is a physician, or you know, someone special in your life that kind of guided you down being a physician, they're actually the one to put a white coat on you first. So you walk across the stage, and you know, if your father was a physician, it's a really special moment for people because your dad would be standing in the middle of the stage with your white coat, and you kind of walk up to him and he puts it on you as the very first time you put a white coat on. So it's a really cool ceremony for a lot of people being on stage and getting to wear the coat for the first time.
What was it like for you?
It was special. It's just another vindication that you're in the right spot where you need to be, and that all the hard work that you've put in so far is kind of still putting you on the path. But again, it's also, it shows you how much responsibility you have, and that now you have a white coat on and people will look at you like you have all the answers. So you need to learn the answers. So it is definitely a motivation to kind of live up to that symbol.
So let's talk about the first year of medical school. What happens in the first year of medical school? How is it structured?
A lot of schools do it differently, so I can only speak to mine. But your very first semester, you show up, you know, day one of classes. It's a lot of almost every single biology, chemistry, or physics class you had in undergrad is packed into one semester. So this is kind of to get everyone on the level playing field, make sure they teach you to their standards. And so that first semester is just jam packed with a bunch of information. The common saying in medical school is it's all the information's like drinking water through a fire hose. You know, you can only hope to get all the information, but you're never going to. So that first semester, at least classroom wise, there's so much information that you're going through. And then on top of all of that, there is anatomy lab. And this is kind of the first experience into cadavers and cutting and looking inside the human and holding, you know, human organs, which is a very odd experience. You know, you never know what it was going to feel like to hold a human brain until you actually do, or hold a human heart.
What did that feel like? I mean, what was going through your mind if you're doing that?
You know, the only thing that went through my mind is, you know, this is a heart that had been beating for 80 plus years in this man that was the cadaver that we were assigned as a group. It's hard to explain because you might be in a science class and hold a frog's heart or a frog's liver or, you know, an inchworm heart or something like that, but something that had been beating for 80 plus years and someone who had thoughts and feelings and loved ones, it is truly a special feeling, and how you really have to honor the human body after that.
Wow, that's powerful, Danny. That's really powerful. So you have classes and you have anatomy and they're teaching you. Let's talk a little bit about the testing. Okay. How do you get evaluated?
So my school was set up that everyone was taking the same test at the same time. So there were no different classes. There, you know, everyone was just in the same class.
How many were in your class?
Yeah, there was 120, I believe, to start off in my class. So all 120 of us were taking the same classes, taking the same tests. There wasn't, you know, person taking class A and another person taking class B. We're all in the same schedules. Ours was set up into 6-week blocks, a test every 2 weeks. So for each six week block, you'd have a test at week two, a test at week four, and then the test at week six would include all 6 weeks. And then you would kind of recycle that block. And then you would go into block number two and kind of repeat that.
What were the tests like?
They were time tests. You get just over a minute and 15 seconds per question. They're usually sitting somewhere around 80 questions, I would say. It would be a fair test. Some of them were in upwards of 150 questions. So 2.5, 3-hour tests were regular for us. They'd be taken on an iPad, a software on an iPad. After the test, which would be a Friday, our whole class would, you know, those were the fun weekends because there was no studying to be done. So that's where a lot of the team building and fun times were held.
How difficult were the tests?
They were hard.
Harder than a college test?
Oh, yeah. High school, I barely studied. College, I studied a little bit. And then medical school, I had to study every day. It was something I had to get used to. I've never been used to. I never had to do before. Medical school made me study every single day for multiple hours. It was just part of your daily routine was studying. And that's never been a part of my daily routine until medical school forced me to. So these tests, they pulled knowledge from, you might have 100 slide decks, 100 classes to look through. And it might be a single slide that had the answer on it out of 1,000 slides. So it was a lot of memory and a lot of complex thinking, a lot of second order questions or third order questions.
Were the semester, or was it set up on a semester? You know, colleges, you know, you get 4 or 5 courses per semester. Was it set up similarly?
My school was set up similarly. We kind of had, you know, like I was saying, those 6 week blocks. I think we had 4 of those blocks in one of the semesters, and then we had a little bit of a break, and then we came back. And that was kind of for the first semester. And then after that, we went into blocks of systems. So one of the blocks was neurology. One of the blocks was cardiology, GI, musculoskeletal. So all of those systems, it was broken down into systems. So we would kind of go through those 6 week increments within neurology, within GI, and kind of build up system by system and into the human body.
Looking back on it, you know, you mentioned, you know, that the type of medicine that you're being trained on, it takes a more holistic view. Now, kind of looking back on it, do you see why the education was put together the way it was with the system, you know, building system upon system?
For me, at least, medical school was hard because I need a big whole picture. I'm more of the person that learns the patterns and applies the pattern to the question. And then that's how I get my answer as opposed to flashcard memory. So medical school was hard for me to start off with because I didn't have enough of the pieces to make a whole picture. But once if you learn cardiology, your renal system plays heavily on cardiology. So whichever one you learn first is going to be harder. But then the second one you learn, you can play off what you already know. And that for me helped me learn more than anything else. So as medical school went on and I kept learning things, I could lean back on past knowledge more and build a better picture of kind of how the body is as a whole and how all the systems are interconnected.
Is medical school similar to college where, you know, it ends in May and then you get your summers off and then you start up again?
Well, with the military aspect, I didn't have any of the summers. Most schools do have some sort of summer break, or a couple weeks at least. Some go straight through. Mine was designed more on a semester schedule. So we were done in June and then didn't pick things back up until August. So we did have some sort of summer, but they were expected to be filled by things, either test taking or board score, board taking in our second year.
Is the second year similar to the first year?
Yes, it's just more of those systems. So instead of having that, the basic sciences, you're just more systems.
Right.
You're just kind of continuing on that path.
So let's talk about third year. What happens in third year?
Third year is most students' first experience into the real world of medicine, where you are seeing patients as someone who is trained and knowledgeable about medicine. So your first 2 years, you're kind of getting the foundations, learning the medicines, learning how to treat things. Your third year is where you apply that and you learn even more. For my school, we went through, you know, family medicine, emergency medicine as blocks. So we would spend a month in each kind of specialty: family med, emergency med, pediatrics, surgery, internal medicine. And you would work either with residents or a physician and kind of see their patients, tell them about their patient, and then you would go see the patient together. Or you would work with the residents in the hospital and they would show you techniques that you might have read in a book in first and second year, but now actually get to see it in real life. So it's where you kind of get most of your clinical experiences is third year, and kind of form an idea what specialty you want to do for the rest of your life and in residency.
So on TV, you see the team approaching the patient's bed, and you see a whole group of different people, and then the lead physician is peppering questions to the people, all of the residents and fellows and medical students. Is that really what happens?
On some level, yes. In the medical community, we call that pimping. So pimping the medical students or pimping the residents. It's kind of how a lot of medical students learn. So you have to be on your toes. And if you get a question wrong, then you're like, man, I should get that right. You know, I need to go home and study that. But it really does happen to where the attending is, you know, asking a question to a resident on the spot, just, you should know this. So it is true. A lot of attending style is to ask pimp questions. Usually not in front of the patients, just because sometimes that makes us look bad. But, you know, when we're out in a group outside the hospital room, that's kind of what's going on.
Have you been questioned and gotten things right or gotten things wrong?
Both.
Both.
I've definitely gotten things right, and I've definitely gotten things wrong that I should have gotten right. A lot of things is attendings think, you know, they ask you questions to see where you are in your career, if you are interested in the topic and interested in the field, and kind of see, can I talk more complex problems with this student? Or are they still on kind of the basic knowledge facts? So it's kind of for them to gauge how much they can teach us as well.
Are you treating patients at that point, or are you observing?
A little bit of both. We don't have any medical license. We don't have any, we do have liability, but we are working under that physician's license. So, you know, we might go see a patient with high blood pressure and say, tell our attending, hey, they have high blood pressure. We need to put them on this medicine. And that attending might go, okay, what medicine do you think? And then we give them an answer and they're like, oh, I agree with that. That sounds good. So they enact our plan. They follow through on it. They're the ones that are actually putting the orders in. But we are kind of going through and hopefully putting a plan together that they can follow just to show our growth and learn. So when we're actually the one putting the orders in and putting the medicines in, we know what we're doing and we're not going to harm someone.
So what does the rotation look like? So you're a month with one group. What does that mean? What are you showing up to the hospital? Are you showing up to the clinic? How does that work?
Yeah. So, you know, whether it's the internal medicine where you're in the hospital or the pediatrics where you're in a clinic, it's much the same. I'll take pediatrics, for example. I, you know, showed up on first day one. I've never met the attending before. He was a pediatric doc in a clinic in town. So, you know, I show up in my white coat and dress clothes and go knock on his office door and introduce myself and say, hey, I'm the new medical student working with you this month. He's like, oh, I've been expecting you. So you kind of had a little chat, get to know them. And he's like, okay, first patient's here. Why don't you go see them and tell me about them? So as a medical student, you go in, interview the patient, see what's going on. Is it just a wellness visit, or do they have a sinus infection, or do they have a cold? If, you know, what's going on with them? So you interview the patient, do a physical exam on them, and then you go back to the attending and then you report your findings. So you present the patient and they're like, okay, did you ask this? And you know, if you did or didn't, you know, you respond. And then both of you together go see that patient. And then you see how they do it. And they, depending on the preceptor, the attending style, they might ask some of the same questions you did, or they might, you know, trust you, talk about other things with the patient. And so you kind of see how they do it. So you get the experience of doing it by yourself and the experience of seeing someone do it.
So everyone's got different paperwork, different electronic medical records type systems. Every time that you work with somebody else, is it different?
Depends. Some hospital systems have the same across the board in clinics. I was working in a couple different clinic systems, so I had to see a couple different EMRs and work with a couple different ones and learn where all the buttons were.
You mentioned white coats a couple of different times. You're in a group of people that show up to the bed. There's some that have long coats, some that have short coats. Tell me about that.
So long coats are when you are a physician. That's signifying that you've been through all your training, and that's the traditional white coat. And then students wear a short, that, you know, that long white coat kind of goes down to your knees, mid thigh. And students, PA, and other specialties wear a short white coat, and that kind of goes to your waist. And that's to signify you're still in training or that you are not a physician. On one of my rotations, I forgot my white coat that day. I didn't know I needed it. And all the attendings and the residents and the students wore their white coats. So I asked a resident to borrow if they had an extra white coat that I could borrow. And so he sent me to the corner of the room where there was a bunch of white coats hanging on a hook. And of course, there was no short white coat. So I was like, oh boy, I guess I'm going to wear a white coat and it's going to be a long one. So I throw it on over my scrubs and I'm walking through the hospital with this big group, you know, as all these pimping questions are flying, and we get in the elevator and I look around and it's the attending, couple residents and a medical student in his short white coat. And here's me sitting in the corner with a long white coat, hoping that they don't recognize that I'm just a little lonely student imposter as a, you know, acting as a big physician. So I was, you know, standing there hoping they wouldn't notice that I was being an imposter.
That's interesting. So fourth year, is fourth year an extension of third year, or is it something different?
It in some ways is an extension of third year. You're still in clinicals. You're still working under a doctor or residents or something like that. But fourth year is where you're kind of doing rotations at residencies. So you're leaving your home institution and you're going to where these residency programs are and you're applying. You're almost there as a month-long interview to show them this is how you work, this is what you know, this is what I'd be as a resident. Junior and senior year in high school, you're preparing for college. Junior and senior year of college, you're preparing for medical school. Your fourth year of medical school is preparing for residency. And this is where you're showing off to these programs who you are and what I'm going to be like as a resident. In essence, you're doing the same thing. You're just doing it at places where you might be working the next year.
So how do you choose what direction that you want to take next?
Specialty-wise, a lot of people don't know until their third year. So you might go into your pediatrics rotation having no earthly idea that you want to do pediatrics, but you leave there like, that was so much fun, so cool, I loved every day, I'm going to go do that. Or you might go to a rotation and you absolutely hate it, and you might have thought you wanted to be an OB, and then you go to your OB third year rotation and you absolutely hate it, and you're like, I can't do that the rest of my life. So there's those people who learn in third year what they want to do, or at least narrow it down. But me, like I said, back in first grade, I knew I wanted to be an orthopedic. I knew I wanted to do that since all the way back then. And it's always continued through high school, college, and medical school. So I've never wavered. So it was easy for me to pick what I wanted to do.
So we talked a little bit about military, but it's a big part of what your experience is all about.
Correct.
Let's talk about that.
As everyone knows, medical school is expensive. And the military has this program called the Health Profession Scholarship Program. And what it is a program to pay for your medical school in return that after you graduate from residency, you will be a military physician working for the military. You get a branch-specific scholarship. So I chose the Army. They're the ones who offered me a scholarship. There are people in the Navy and people in the Air Force who are also in the same program. A little bit of differences between, but not anything crazy different. And throughout medical school, your only requirement is to do a couple trainings while over the summers that we talked about. Sometimes you get a month off. And for me, between first and second year, I went to Fort Sill in Oklahoma and completed a direct commissioning course. And then this past summer, in 2020, I went to my basic officer leadership course in San Antonio. So those were kind of the two main requirements while you're in medical school. And then after, I will go to a military residency. So I'm in the process of applying to a military hospital residency. And then after that, I will owe years of service in the Army as a physician in return for paying for my medical school and a stipend on top of that as well.
Can you expand on the training a little bit?
So it's not quite like what you think of the reserves where you go 1-2 weekends out of a month and do all your trainings. This program, you leave for a month, you travel to that base and you're living in barracks or a hotel and you are, you know, you're learning about the military, you're learning about the rank and structure, how to salute, how to put on your uniform, how to be a leader, how to fire a weapon, navigate out in the wilderness using only a map and a compass. So they're teaching you the basic Army skills so that you can be an Army leader over these 2 months, 2.5 months of training that I had to put into the summers between classes. And other than that, I just lived a normal life, didn't have to shave every day, didn't have to have my hair cut other than those months, which was nice.
How did your experience differ from your classmates?
I think the main difference is I'm not on loans. That's kind of one of the main differences is that I have an income coming in. Not a big one, but it is still an income. So I don't have this big, giant $200,000, $300,000 of debt looming over my head.
Have you talked to your classmates about the size of their debts?
At some point, you're just like, it's just debt. It's just a number on a piece of paper that I'll pay back. It's worth it for me to get to where I want to be. And it's crazy that the debts are, you know, $200,000, $300,000 for an education. But that's just what you have to do. It's just the stepping stone that you have to use to cross the bridge. You know, it might sound like a crazy number, but that's just what it is. And at some point you just ask for more money and they still just give you it, which is crazy.
Yeah. So we're approaching a date coming up in January. That's a pretty important date. Let's talk about that a little bit.
The scary date of January 6th. That is the match day for the military applicants. That is the day you get an email, phone call, or a list that tells you where you will be for your residency. So for the next 3 to 5 years, you learn where you're going to be and what you're going to be, what specialty. So it's very anxiety driven this day, you know, because everyone that I've learned and talked with on all my travels, you know, we all find out on that day where we're going to be, who we'll work with. So it's scary.
Yeah. So is it similar to medical school where you've got an idea of the programs that you'd like to attend, but you don't, it's not under your control that you're going to go there. It's under their control that you have interest and they have interest in you. Is it similar?
Yes. Yeah. It's like applying for a job. A certain amount of people who are applying for the orthopedic positions, and Those residencies select the ones that they want, and you know they pick who they want out of that applicant pool. So on January 6th, we find out who they picked.
Well, we're a couple of weeks away from January 6th right now, or I guess a week away from January 6th right now, Danny. I wish you all the success, and I hope that you're matched with the program that's going to challenge you and that's going to be the most rewarding and most beneficial for you as you build your career.
Thank you.
Danny, is there anything else that you think it would be important for our listeners to know about medical school?
It's not as easy as it looks. It truly is a marathon of sprints. There's so much knowledge to know, so much to learn, so much that you forget. You know, one of the jokes is that I've learned more than other people will ever know in their life, or at least I've forgotten more than anyone will ever learn in their life. It's just a marathon. So when you see the tired, burnt out medical student there, that's in the hospital, living on 3 hours of sleep, go ahead and just give them a high five or a Coke or a coffee because they're going to need it.
It is great to talk to someone at the start of their journey. Since we recorded the interview, Danny learned that he matched into a residency program at Dwight D. Eisenhower Medical Center in Augusta, Georgia. Congratulations, Danny. I'm so happy for you and your family. Now, a few of my takeaways from this conversation. First of all, Danny's perseverance was impressive. You know, not everything goes perfectly, but Danny, he continued to find a way. He retook classes in college. He knew he had to strengthen his application, so he did a gap year. He shadowed physicians, did internships, took the MCAT twice to get a better score. And revealed that he revised his study habits while he was in medical school. Secondly, medical school is hard. You're competing against people who were at the top of their classes in college. But it should be this way. The stakes for docs are high. They have our lives in their care. So what I want is people who've been challenged to learn, not just to take tests, but really to learn. Finally, his commitment to the military. Yes, scholarship is fantastic, and not having debt is going to be a great thing for him as he starts. But it's not free. He has a commitment to serve, and we'll all owe him our respect when he begins that journey. Now for your action item. Danny described the difference between osteopathic and allopathic medicine. About a quarter of all U.S. medical students train at osteopathic schools, but many people don't know the difference. I have a few resources in the show notes that describe a bit more about the differences and similarities. I'd like you to visit some of these sites and learn a bit more. It will help you better understand your customers. Thank you for listening. Please spread the word and tell a friend or two to listen to the Mastering Medical Device podcast, as interviews like today's can help you become a more effective medical device leader. Work hard. Be kind.